Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 308 of the Roguecast, recorded October 7th, 2020. You're attacked by 1d4 Destros.
Okay, take two. You guys don't know this, but there was about 5 minutes of discussion before I realized we were on the wrong microphone. So if any of this sounds staged or like we've rehearsed it, it's because we accidentally rehearsed it.
I can pretend spontaneous.
Can you?
Maybe.
I can't. I'm horrible at it.
Let's talk about Wonder Woman Earth 3.
Earth 2.
Earth 2. Ballpark.
I thought it was Earth 1.
We do not sound rehearsed. Wonder Woman Earth 1 is correct.
So we're jumping into the news. And the Earth One was DC. This is DC's projects where they re-envision characters by like big notable writers and artists.
Yeah, right? Graphic novel only.
Batman, Superman.
Yeah,
JMS did the Superman. Jeff Johns did Batman.
And I think to us at least, would we all agree that the Wonder Woman by Grant Morrison and Yannick Paquette is the best?
Yes.
And now we have learned that it is definitively getting a third volume.
Yep, which should complete it because it's a 3-volume series.
It is.
Yeah,
and I'm super excited.
I'm on board. I love Yannick Paquette. I love Grant Morrison. This version of Wonder Woman might be my favorite
because
leaning a little bit towards like her past incarnations, but definitely sort of doing the Morrison rethink.
Yeah, a little Silver Age-y in ways, but also
he's also like, trying to like really run with the notion of the pacifist Wonder Woman. But
yeah.
If you ever hear the interviews with him talking about it, it's super fun to listen to. He has really interesting thoughts. All right, I know we're running on a slightly tighter time schedule today, and it's a huge comics week.
Yep.
So let's carry on with the news.
All right, this is kind of exciting news. Renegade, the game company, is doing. They've got a license now for deck building games and RPGs of My Little Pony, G.I. Joe, and Transformers. Now I believe there is already a My Little Pony RPG.
There is.
But this is news. They're going to do deck building. They're going to do RPGs, and they're all going to be compatible.
That's nuts.
So you're going to have G.I. Joe versus My Little Pony?
G.I. Joe versus My Little Pony.
I mean, they're doing it in the comics.
Yep.
Although I don't believe it's necessarily a versus match.
No. But, I mean,
what's the RPG going to be? Did I hear they're using a D20 basis?
I thought that they were using their own system that they've got.
Okay.
Because they have a system. Oh, no. 5th edition compatible. Oh, sorry. I also forgot Power Rangers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're going to do that.
Every Hasbro property.
Yeah, basically the big
thing. I think the big thing for us, we're all big fans of deck building games.
Yeah.
And we're all big fans of G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
So like a deck building G.I. Joe or RPG, I'm all about that.
As long as it doesn't have too many of like the comics and the toys weird new characters.
Yeah.
So there's like going to be a character named Zoom Call or something like that. Anyway, yeah, for RPGs, y'all know I have run a bunch of licensed games using this sort of homebrew,
yep,
very modded Fate system, you know, that I do, but it's real rules light and almost sort of more narratively structured. So I, you know, as much as I believe this is going to be a beautiful G.I. Joe book and it'll have cool art and everything, I would never run it. It's just not what I'm going to want.
No, Dave, this is going to come out be 5th edition compatible. It's going to blow your old
God.
Your homebrew out of the
system.
I don't
even like D&D.
But they will have like monster manuals that will have like rundowns of characters, and that like, might be really
you're attacked by 1d4 Destros.
Why would you even compare him to a D4? He's at least a D10.
No, that's how many there are.
The amount, yeah, that is something that used to, especially in the very earliest Monster Manuals, Nick, they would be like, you know, when you enter, you know, a troll colony or whatever, there'll be 2d6 troll crones and,
yep,
you know, 2d and 1d8 barbarians.
There'll be, if you go to a mountainous area, there are 1d4 Destros there.
Yeah, in Scotland.
I did not know this because I was not cool enough to play D&D. My brother wouldn't let me.
I was in the same case. My brother, I think, was overall maybe nicer than yours was.
Yes.
But I was still like the little runt brother and I didn't get to play.
I got kicked out of the basement.
I was the older brother and I played D&D all I wanted.
Son of a bitch. this is a pretty cool thing, though.
I think they need to get Sergeant Slaughter to do the ad for it, and he's going to be like, You what are you? Are you playing some homebrew system? Without the G.I. Joe 5th edition, you're nowhere.
Yeah, that would get me to do it if it being berated by an aging wrestler.
He's probably needing the money, so he'll do it.
That's true, he'll do it.
What else have we got?
All right. Big news, they have cast Iman Vellani, who is sort of a no-name actor, to be Miss Marvel in Disney Plus. So they've now got directors, they've got an actress. She looks the part.
Yeah.
I'm super excited they're going to do this. I don't know when it's going to happen.
You know how sometimes when you see the, I guess the sort of stock, not stock photo, but what do you call the actor's photo that they
headshot
shop around? The headshot. You're like, oh, well, maybe not. But like, this is one of those where everybody I know who saw it was like, oh, that looks like Miss Marvel.
Yep. Perfect. Yep.
So yeah, as long as we don't have to delay because of COVID and she's 30 when it starts.
Right.
Then yeah, that's
filming
because looks great.
They're filming on all the other Marvel shows right
they're
now.
They're probably gonna do it in Vancouver or whatever. Probably,
yeah. Places that actually take things seriously.
Supernatural has taught us anything. An Arrow, you can make Vancouver look like anything.
Yeah, the picture even kind of almost had her exuberance.
Yeah,
which I like.
What if we find out that her voice is Gilbert Gottfried?
I'm still down with it.
I'm Kamala Khan.
I love Carol Danvers. So wait—is this TV show or this is going to be a Marvel
TV
movie?
Show. TV show, but she's going to be in the movies.
Very cool.
So what'd be really cool is if she is like idolizing Carol.
Yeah.
They use some stock footage in the show, and then she shows up in Captain Marvel.
Yep.
They've got to do that. Yeah. I mean, those characters are very tied together, mm-hmm. as much so as like Captain Falcon and Winter Soldier.
We'll get that payoff in 2026.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of unexpected things coming in 2021, Borat 2. How did he do this?
Randy, is it possible you could give me the full title of the movie?
Oh, is there a full title?
The full title that has like broken English.
I didn't see that.
I didn't either.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, like, first of all, I think they are playing
up. Oh my god. Borat, Gift of Pornographic Monkey.
That is actually not the full title.
Borat, Gift of Pornographic Monkey to Vice Premier Mikhail Pence to make benefit regionally diminished nation of Kazakhstan.
Mikhail Pence.
That's amazing.
Yes.
So, really, why were you, is it because you think everybody knows Borat?
I don't know Borat, but apparently the right-wing people just don't pay any attention because he's at like a...
He got to a Pence rally.
He goes to a Pence rally.
Yep.
He like yells at Pence from the crowd.
Yeah.
And... there's a bit where he's at one of those pregnancy crisis centers. Yeah. By the way, I always feel a little bad when people have been Borat's pranking these people. Otherwise, seem very nice.
They sometimes are really trying.
But those scumbags need to be pranked hard.
Yeah.
And
my God, he says he's like...
The big bit is he's got a daughter now.
Right. Somebody's playing Borat's daughter.
And she has eaten a plastic baby that was in a cake.
Yeah.
So he goes in and he's telling this person, he's like... I put baby inside her. Can we take baby out?
Yes.
I don't even love Borat. I mean, the first one was fun.
Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen is great, but I am really excited to see this one because it was
really fun.
Yeah, it was kind of an unexpectedly entertaining thing. And yes, it's the uncomfortable humor of Borat is something I wrestle with too.
Yeah.
But I do know that I've seen enough that the actual humor wins me over usually.
Yeah.
And the trailer looked good.
Hopefully this sneaks into 2020 late,
maybe.
And we'll get it on video on demand.
Yes. Jamie Foxx played Electro in Spider-Man 2.
Right.
Yeah,
this was the Spider-Man that was the kind of flopped previous Fox.
Is it regarded as the worst Spider-Man, or is that Spider-Man 3 from Venom, the Venom one?
Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man has not looked upon well.
Yeah. I think people always liked Tobey Maguire in the role, even if he wasn't quite the comic Peter Parker, liked him. So I think Spider-Man may be considered the worst.
So you can say this is the worst
Blue
Spider-Man.
Blue hip-hop Electro was a little sad.
And here's the weird thing. They're going to reprise him in the Sony in the new ones.
However, he will not be blue.
Is that true?
I think he's outright electricity.
Like, it almost sounds like they're trying to let him do a redemption of concept where they are not... It's not a continuation anyway.
Okay.
Like, he will be playing a different Electro. I think they're just like, Jamie Foxx is a great actor. He can do a great villain.
We screwed him over.
It's still a weird call.
I think this is the first time that's happened.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
J.K. Simmons.
Like, reprising a villain?
Oh, reprising a role, though.
Yeah,
J.K. Simmons is playing...
J. Jonah Jameson.
He does seem like... Well, no, I guess he is a different JJJ.
Yeah, he is.
It is a different continuity. And he's like a...
Very similar.
Yeah, but he's a bit more Infowars'd out in that one.
Yeah.
It's anyway, interesting. I like Jamie Foxx a lot.
Have they yet to get... Are they going to get around to Kraven someday? I know he might not be considered an A-list villain unless you're doing Kraven's Last Hunt, and I kind of don't want to start with that.
I don't want to start with Kraven's Last Hunt.
But he'd be more of an... He'd be a great cold open villain or something like
that. He'd be a great member Kraven. Of the Sinister Six.
But, yeah, I honestly would kind of want... If I see Electro around, I sort of... kind of want multiple villains in the Spider-Man movie sometimes.
I bet he won't be the only one.
Well, like, they snuck several into the first...
Far From Home?
Or no.
Homecoming.
Homecoming.
Yep.
And they did a great job of it. Like, Shocker was kind of stealth in there and stuff like that. Yeah. But in any case, because Jamie Foxx is a good actor, willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, same here. Warner Brothers has announced they're adapting Black to film. That's the graphic novel by...
Vault?
Jamal, it's not Vault, it's Black Mask.
Black Mask.
I'm trying to think if it was Jamal Igel was the artist, I can't remember.
I think he was.
But it is a premise where basically only black people get superpowers.
Yep.
And they are sort of operating underground and the government is basically trying to shut them down. And it is especially timely now, and I'm looking forward to seeing this seems like a great movie franchise.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything going on in popular culture and stuff dealing with racial subtext and things like that?
No, nothing great. Nothing going on with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how this will have anything to say about modern times, but, give it a shot.
This was exciting news to me. Apparently, Miramax and Guy Ritchie are working on a TV series of The Gentlemen.
Yeah, this was weird.
That is weird, because the movie is very much done.
Well, I mean, yes, but Matthew McConaughey's character continues.
Sure.
And you could keep him going.
Oh, wait.
If you give him a show... Well,
that last Guy Ritchie movie is getting expanded into a TV show?
A TV show.
The one about, like, criminals sort of wrestling over control of a pot empire?
Yep.
I thought the movie was great.
I love it.
I don't know.
It may be my favorite of Guy Ritchie's movies.
I still like Lockstock more, but...
I do see how that style could adapt to TV.
Yeah.
Especially,
I know Guy Ritchie's doing it, so.
And, you kind of got the twisty labyrinthine plots and the smash cuts
so
and all that.
Apparently, it was a TV pitch first.
Oh.
And now it looks like, Guy Ritchie is going to write and direct the series.
I'm all for this.
And I don't know what the TV show will look like, but I'm all for it, yeah. That sounds great.
It's going to be done with Muppets.
Maybe appearance from Hugh Grant somewhere down the line.
Man, Hugh Grant is so good in that. Netflix has ordered a fourth season of Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
At the same time, they canceled the fourth season of Glow they'd already ordered.
Yeah.
And canceled and said they're not doing a second season of Teenage Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, which sucks.
So I'm like...
Are these shows that are left completely hanging? Like, did they end cliffhanger?
Yes. Oh, completely.
Teenage Bounty Hunters is a huge cliffhanger.
You think they might end up anywhere else?
No.
These are Netflix originals. They're not going anywhere else.
That sucks.
Well, the thing that frustrates me is right now, it's like, this is the second thing, along with Stumptown, we've seen canceled after it was already renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're saying, we're going to do a fourth season of Cobra Kai, and I'm like, are you? Because I don't believe anything anymore.
Cobra Kai seems to have kind of caught a zeitgeist, and I wouldn't be shocked
so
if that one made it through. That's true. That's true.
Well, had a comic.
Yep.
Cobra Kai is a comic. There's some similarities here.
We all like Cobra Kai, right?
We all do. I'm excited about this, but it is somewhat tampered by the fact that I'm not sure that I believe they're going to get this fourth season. I'm like, sure, you renew whatever you want. You don't.
Were they saying
Cobra Kai is definitely in sort of like the viewer's focus right now?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it'll probably get a fourth season.
That's what I'm thinking too.
But I don't know if it'll get beyond that.
I think that even might be about the healthy run for it.
Yeah, I agree.
They were talking about bringing in what's her name who played
Allie.
His girlfriend right
Elizabeth
in the original one. Yeah, and I think that'd be fun. The strange expansion of the Karate Kid universe has worked out in ways I could not have imagined.
What I want is Hilary Swank to come back.
And that too.
The next Karate
that's
Kid.
Been talked about.
Fourth season should be Hilary Swank comes back, Allie begins taking karate, and then the evil Japanese villain from 2 shows up and they all have to have a fight.
Like, I have this feeling it's going to be something like that.
Hilary Swank works with Netflix right now. She's on her way.
I watched some clips of the Karate Kid 2, which I did see in the theater at the time as a kid, and I believe that's the last time I saw it. But the kid who's the bad guy in it is scary.
Yeah.
He is like goes from being the bully threats of the first one to I will murder you.
Yeah, it's definitely more dangerous.
anyway, I wish the franchise well. I hope it happens.
How about this?
Eh?
Karate Kid 5.
Okay.
Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious.
are they gonna start getting to the remakes where it's got Will Smith's kid or whatever?
Yes, yeah. we're gonna mash all that together. And G.I. Joe. And My Little Pony.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. All right, last bit of there's a new trailer for the movie Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds.
Let's quick say what the premise is.
So we'd seen the previous trailer, and it's basically he's an NPC in a video game world, like a
it almost looks
Fortnite-esque.
Like a, yeah, it looks like there's elements of Grand Theft Auto, but like with a little bit more of the absurdity of Fortnite.
Yeah.
Or what's that Grand Theft Auto goofy one?
Oh yeah, Saints Row.
Saints Row. A little bit of Saints Row in there.
Basically, there's all kinds of people running around being psychotic, blowing everything up.
Yep.
And he's an NPC who lives in this universe where people rob banks all the time, and he's like this.
But he's like an office worker or a drone
his
at a bank
friend,
or something.
His best friend is like not a police officer. He's like a
Security guard.
Yeah.
So the first trailer looked like that, and like basically he becomes like the sidekick of this woman who's actually a PC, and they're going on some kind of adventures.
Yeah.
The new trailer
definitely twists that.
Twists that a little bit, and it's like, oh, so actually he becomes aware it's a video game, and that's not the only twist.
Right.
Can we go ahead and say what it is?
Yeah.
Like, the people out in the real world become aware that he's aware.
Yeah.
And he, like, becomes, like, a little celebrity within the game. They, like, calling him, like, Blue Shirt Guy or whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, the trailer did show more of his arc and stuff than I wanted it to, but it looked so fun.
Well, it also reminds me of the sort of positivity thing. Like, the thing I want from, like, the thing I love from Ted Lasso or The Good Place, the notion of someone who's, like, hey, maybe we don't have to be immoral in this world. Maybe we can be good.
Yeah.
And, like, that is a message we could really use right now.
Weird to get that message from Deadpool, but Ryan Reynolds can sell it, actually.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting. It's like, I would have expected this to be sort of anarchic, you know.
Right. Yeah. You could have just done, wouldn't it be fun to be a guy who just by day was like an NPC, like a normal guy NPC in a game and got to be a criminal or whatever. And like that's the surface level that I could have expected from it, but it looks almost more like it's like gaming for the vibe of like either Galaxy Quest or the new Jumanji movies and stuff like that, where it's going to have a heart, but also be like really pretty funny and poke a lot of sly fun at things. So it definitely suddenly is on my list.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I was already looking forward to it, and now I'm looking forward to it more.
Y'all are easy sells. Your horse.
Yes.
I love Ryan Reynolds, and I don't care.
There's some whores in this house. All right. We're going to be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of October 7th, and it is, in fact, the biggest week of comics we've had since COVID.
Yep. There are, like, two or three dozen more comics than we've been averaging.
We had to lose our last week's comics list.
Usually we leave a row up at least of like sort of the highlights of the previous week, but there was not a chance this week. There's just too much stuff. And it's exciting because there's also a lot of good stuff in the mix.
Yeah, there's a bunch of first issues, a bunch of notable second issues, the third week of X of Swords. A
couple of big anniversary issues in there, like a Spider-Man one and some other stuff.
So let's start talking about them. And one of them is Transformers Back to the Future number one, which I think we all really enjoyed.
Yes. Not a natural, necessarily, mix for a franchise, and yet they are both mid-80s, like 84 for Transformers, 85 for Back to the Future.
I don't know. They just decided that in the opening of the first one where...
a couple of, like, Rumble from the Decepticons.
Yep.
He's
Rumble and Ravage.
Aren't they just watching? They're watching as the Libyans
are chasing.
He's watching the Libyans chase Marty.
And to them, he's like, this is good times. This is just watching people shoot.
Hey, Soundwave, you'll never guess what Ravage found. Humans trying to turn each other into scrap. It's quality entertainment. Better than the gladiator pits back home.
Yep.
And he happens to witness time travel.
Yep. And Megatron is like, that's it. That's how we stop the Autobots.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in Back to the Future 2 style fashion, when Marty comes back from the past, he winds up in a future where where Transformers are basically, with the help of Administrator Biff, making humans of Hill Valley make Energon.
Yeah. It's pretty great with callbacks to Back to the Future 2.
If you like these properties, it's kind of a must read, I think. It's I do know some people like Back to the Future and like never knew Transformer stuff, and it'd be gibberish to them. But if you're listening to this podcast, I bet there's some 79% of those people have some fondness for Transformers,
and also introduces the newest Autobot. So.
Right, and this is the big thing: is like, did you ever want to see the Lamborghini time travel Lamborghini?
DeLorean,
my God, turn into a Transformer? Because you will,
because that's awesome.
It's kind of like what they did with Ecto-1 becoming a Transformer in Ghostbusters. It's a fun idea, and this is a really fun first issue.
It is.
I loved when they're at the like sort of Decepticon work camp, and what do you call it? Starscream is doing the Biff to Supervisor Biff. He's like, "Think human, think." Yep.
They were great nods.
Hello. anyway,
there's an image book called "Getting It Together," which is by Sina Grace and Omar Spahi, and I think Jenny D. Fine is the artist. Yeah. So this is basically, it was described in the pitch as friends, if it were queer friendly and not all white people.
Yeah, it's kind of modern, and it's really good. I thought it was great, and the art was spectacular.
Well, the cover on Dave's copy is, in fact, Friends.
Friends
yeah. yeah, I did not realize that at first because I didn't watch Friends, but then I'm like, oh, yeah, they do have that thing with umbrellas.
Well, cover B is a reference to Sex and the City.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This was really good. I was hoping for it. I wasn't sure because relationship comics are tough.
Well, Randy, you were just telling me about like the opening scene, and just like give you an example of the way this is kind of a modern relationship book, is a couple of like best friends are talking, and one of them just had a breakup with his girlfriend because they were talking about opening up their relationship, and she was like, what, on tour with her band?
Yeah.
And she kind of thought it was already up and
so
running.
So she went in and slept with one of them.
She slept with him, and he's like, we hadn't started it yet. And so it's about that kind of like the weird gray area before things had been hammered out, which is a very modern kind of relationship idea. This is not quite 1950s stuff.
And his best friend is going on a date. He's queer, and he's going on a date with a guy, and there's some drama that comes up around that. There's a lot of like different relationships here. There's also just a big story about like handling stuff in a more mature way. It doesn't go into the crazy like melodramatic way you'd expect it to go.
Right.
It's really well done. I was very pleased with it. It's a lot of fun, and I think people who enjoy like the books like Sunstone and Swing and some of those.
Yeah. Any of those that are sort of thoughtful about their kind of modern relationships.
This is not as overtly sexy as those books. This is more of like the relationship stuff. But if you're liking those books for relationship stuff, I would definitely recommend this.
I agree.
And it's weird. Like, this is the kind of stuff that would be pretty mainstream on TV, but in comics it's very unusual.
Right.
Nick, you want to talk about the X of Swords stuff? I know you're dying to talk about the X of Swords stuff.
Maybe you probably mean Ten of Swords.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Dumb
it is
shit.
Indeed.
Nope. Text of Swords.
Yeah.
Hickman has come out and said it is Ten of Swords.
I don't care what Hickman says.
Well, that's because they're supposed to be based on tarot cards, and that's like a... What was it? Is it like... Is Ten of Swords? I mean, that I don't know if that's like an actual thing.
It's like Ten of Cups, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
No, Dave, you're thinking of Megazords.
So, yes, there are three books for the Ten of Swords this week. There's parts 3, 4, and 5... Or 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
4, 5, and
or 6. No, 3, no. 4, and 5.
Yeah.
It is Wolverine, X-Force, and Marauders. However, that doesn't really have any bearing on what's inside.
It's all one big story.
It's all
right?
One big story. However, now it's broken up into little stories featuring a character going to find a sword.
Right. The way we talked about this originally was like unusually the model of the very first G.I. Joe cartoon miniseries when they would split into different teams and they each go after like some piece of like a device that Cobra was trying to get. And this is not like unique to G.I. Joe. Like, the old Avengers comics would do that sometimes. They'd like, you know, Scarlet Witch and Vision, you go off, and Yellowjacket, Hawkeye, and Cap are going to this. It's a kind of a time-honored tradition, but this is kind of combining with fantasy elements, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, but it's also kind of a cool way to just, like, explore the Marvel Universe in unique ways, because the first story, which is the first two books, focuses on Wolverine and his need to find the Muramasa Blade. Which doesn't actually mean the original Muramasa Blade, just a blade created by Muramasa.
Okay.
And it's written by Ben Percy. Both parts are written by Ben Percy and drawn by, what did we say, Victor Bogdanovich. Which I really like his artwork. But it takes Wolverine to places. He sees Silver Samurai. He talks to his wife, his once wife, Mariko. Leads him to the
I do
hand.
Appreciate that Marvel has never done the full reboot, and so that, man, he like, what, married her in the 80s?
Yep.
Like, that. I'm glad that still is around.
Yep.
Yeah.
As in his history.
Nick,
why is he seeking a sword? What's going on? Why do they want swords?
Because they're...
Swords are bitching.
I mean, but the whole notion is there are 10 people that need to find blades in order to enter an arena to fight for the world, essentially. It is a Mortal Kombat riff. in some ways.
I hope Goro is in it.
We don't know if Goro is in it, but we do meet Wolverine's opposite in this story. And
the Badger.
He is a new character, and I described...
Is he from that other world place?
He is. And
which is like a magical kingdom.
Yeah, and I described him to our staffer Anna as
bald and super tall.
A kind of more egotistical, murderous version of Loki.
Okay.
He's very charismatic, so he's not like Wolverine at all, but he is.
Well, when you say his opposite, that doesn't sound too Wolverine-y, but like, is it like.
Well, his opposite in the competition.
He's going to face him?
Yeah, okay. He's ultimately going to fight. And it also leads them to hell, which is interesting.
Okay.
Two L's or one L?
One L. Or no, two L's. It's actual hell.
Is that the one that has like Mephisto and stuff? Or
yeah,
is it like.
Dealing with that where Wolverine has actually been before.
Okay, yeah.
And then the third part is a Storm-centric one, featuring her returning to Wakanda. Hmm. And there is a great tete-a-tete between her and Shuri.
Huh.
Writer Vita Ayala does a really good job of kind of giving Storm her personality, but also a reminder that she was in love with Black Panther and sort of was queen to Wakanda and has all this, you know, relationship ties to that place, which is... I don't know if I was hugely in love with it at the time, but now I'm kind of like,
it works.
Yeah, it's part of her past.
It works okay in kind of retrospect.
Yeah.
But there's also an opening with her talking with Kitty, and then on the side pages are glimpses of, like, memorable moments in Storm's past. So you get to see her as a kid in the fields of Africa as sort of a goddess, a thief. Fighting Callisto for leadership of the Morlocks.
That was when all the coolest stuff happened in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also we get a background of the sword that she's after, which is the first sword of Wakanda.
Okay. I see what looks like hieroglyphs or pictograms or something.
Yeah, it's called Skybreaker. And throughout this, there is the traditional Hickman kind of breakdown of things, but there's also a breakdown of the sword. Like
you're talking about text page.
Text page of like what it is made out of and where it... originated from, how much it weighs.
It's all, it's made up, it's a big lumpy sword made up of the heart-shaped root thing. it's more of a flail.
Honestly, these are just really well written. I love the idea of sort of exploring the Marvel Universe in this way, and it's just fun. And
well,
I think that's what I want out
of comics. Say this, of all the possible sort of things that could have been their first crossover, I would not have guessed they sort of globe-hopping, fantasy, alternate world, epic, with Mortal Kombat-ish elements of such... It's like, it's going to be single combat, right?
Yes.
Of swordsmen between, like, this magical world and Earth or Krakoa. And so like, points for Hickman for really... for kind of surprising people with something like that. And it seems to have taken off. And like, this could have been another mutant story. This could have been a Cameron Hodge Returns.
Which came out last week, made it real for the people, because in story, obviously no one dies in comics because they always come back. The loser of these battles will die.
This is like a death.
They can't be reborn in Krakoa.
Nice.
They're basically
so that means
destroyed.
That there's a reasonable chance that some actual characters might get killed
in
this.
It's possible.
Magma's gonna die.
So he's undoing his No Mutants Die.
Well, I think he's wanting to say that means that they won't live
there's
in a world
stakes.
With no consequences.
One mutant has already died, and like actual real death, which is
was it Gold Balls?
It was not, because he's one of the five, and if he dies, then nothing works.
That's terrible. I would really like Gold Balls to die.
But he's not called that anymore, right?
I'm not sure. Actually,
all right, that's all right. Let's not deter from what's a cool thing by talking about
like
goofy
fun.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, I see Norse Mythology on your stack.
Yeah, Norse Mythology is one of Neil Gaiman's coolest books of, like, the last 10 years, and they have adapted it to comics, as they do many of his works. This has multiple artists on it, actually, because, you know, anybody who's read the book knows that it is, a collection of the sort of most interesting to Neil Gaiman myths from Norse Mythology, starting with kind of an overview of, like, the nine worlds and how they work that's done by his old partner in crime, P. Craig Russell did like they won in like an Eisner and like a World Fantasy Award for like the Arabian Nights storyline in Sandman, and they've worked together often.
What was their crime that they were partners in?
The crime of good comics. let's see. So P. Craig Russell draws the opening story that sort of sets up the cosmos of Norse mythology. Then the story of how Odin lost his eye is drawn by Mike Mignola, who is no slouch, and the kind of realistic classical type artist Jerry Ordway draws the first part of the story, and I suspect in the next issue the second part of the story called The Treasures of the Gods, which I think is the one that begins with the theft of Thor's hammer, and has like some great Loki trickery in it. I didn't get to read all of this, but I think in some ways I heard this as an audiobook because like Neil Gaiman's reading his own stuff, especially this one was spectacular. One of the best audiobooks I've ever heard. And this kind of can't live quite up to that, but it is a fun interpretation, and knowing how many people kind of enjoy Norse mythology and seeing Loki be a little shit, but like a really kind of likable bullshit. There's some great stuff in here. I think this is going to be an adaptation that people like. And it clearly is going to have a bunch of notable artists on it throughout. So, I'm going to give this the recommendation.
Walking Dead Deluxe comes out this week. This is the first issue of the new reissue of Walking Dead as a full-color series.
Yep.
It's the color looks great.
How many issues did Walking Dead run?
100-some?
Did it reach 150?
It was like just short of one. It was almost short of 200. It was supposed to go to 200. And it ended in like, something. I thought it was like 193 something. Or something.
193?
Yeah, because remember they had solicited up to like 200 and then they tricked us.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So in addition to that, there's a text page by Robert Kirkman where he talks about why do this in color now? How are we going to do this? And then they've got the cutting room floor, which is like basically some stories of the first issues, some handwritten, some notes about the plots. He's looking back through his handwritten notes and the pages and basically talking it through. So it's
and there's some pinups even in the back.
And there's some pinups.
This is basically the equivalent of getting a good director's commentary and bonus material. It is only $4, I think, right?
Yeah. And there's like several different covers. You can choose your favorite cover.
I also noticed that they said in the solicit that there's no plans to collect it anytime soon.
Right.
So for those of you who want to check it out in the short term, check out Get Color Walking Dead. You're going to be picking up in single issues.
Yeah.
But it looks like they're having a lot of fun with it.
I also want to mention Amazing Spider-Man number 49/850 comes out this week. This is a big $10 issue. Yeah. It's a big giant issue. It is Spidey and Green Goblin fighting together against the Sin Eater. Who has gained some kind of big power in here.
I was going to say, the Sin Eater is not usually physically on a high level, but I know that this has been a big story about
it. He has the power of an A-list villain in this one.
Yeah.
And they sort of have to team up.
Rhino.
And while this goes on, a group of like Spider-Gwen and Spider-Woman and Silk and Miles Morales are all sitting out there debating on whether what to do about all this, because they thought they've all seen this vision that Green Goblin kills Spidey.
Okay.
The art is by Ryan Otley, Humberto Ramos, and Mark Bagley in three different chapters.
Okay.
Nick Spencer writing. And then there's some backup stories. There's a Busick story that has Chris Piccolo art.
Huh?
There's a couple other backups. I forget who the artists are.
Busick and Chris Piccolo is not a team I would have imagined.
It's a little odd.
But I'm kind of interested to read that now.
Trad Moore and then Saladin Ahmed and Aaron Cooter. So there's like several backups.
It's I like a bunch of those artists. I gotta look at this.
It's a big big packed anniversary issue. The lead story is really good. It's tying into the Kindred thing, the mysterious new villain. I've been really digging this. I jumped back in on the Sin Eater story, and I'm glad to be back enjoying Spider-Man again. It's been a while since I've been reading it, so definitely worth a look, and lots of cool covers and lots of good art. So also Champions number 1 came out this week, which is a new teen book based on the outlawed story where teenage heroes have been outlawed and now the champions are like standing up against
them. This is Marvel's Champions that's got like Miss Marvel and Miles,
Nova,
yeah,
Vision, some other characters. Yeah. What else?
I think most of the there's some other a few notable second issues, like the second issue of that Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah. Yep.
Continues to be good as we see what are their
trauma team?
The trauma team. Thank you. One of the trauma team sort of deal with a unique situation.
Yeah. it's good. It's dealing with sort of the PTSD of being these like mercenary medics for hire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good second issue. Also, second issue of Rise of Ultraman, which kind of gets more. They're definitely doing the origin of their Ultraman, which I'm digging. I'm enjoying their take on it.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I know you and I both really enjoyed the second issue of Black Widow.
Yeah.
Fourth issue of Deceased Dead Planet, the the sequel to DC's popular zombie Decease.
It was so good.
It was really good. Yeah. We all love that.
This one is a very New God centric issue and has a lot of fun stuff in it with Metron and Mr. High Miracle Father. And High Father. Yeah,
probably one of the best depictions of High Father I've seen in a while.
They got him pretty good, I think.
Speaking of fourth issues, the long delayed Batman the Max number 4 comes out this week. So you've been waiting on that. That is finally out.
It was like delayed anyway, and then COVID hit, and then it became crazy.
Yeah. And also as a fourth issue, we have Kirkman's other book, Firepower.
Yeah,
was a great fourth issue. I'm loving sort of the continuation of these characters, getting to know them a little bit more. And Chris Samnee can do no wrong.
Oh, his art is so good.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think you and I, Nick, are really both enjoying this book.
I honestly think it might be my favorite Kirkman book.
And then going back to the second issue, we've got We Only Find Them When They're Dead, which, importantly, can be sung to the tune of Garbage's I'm Only Happy When It Rains.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, a second issue, we have Chelsea Kane's Crazy Spy Island number 2, which is about murderous mermaids and an island filled with spies.
Okay.
It's pretty great, actually. So much fun.
One of Marvel's big books, Thor number 8, hits this week. It's just a two-part story. They did the big epic, and this is the second part of this two-part where basically Thor lets other people have the hammer. There's some great Thor and Iron Man stuff.
Yep.
There's kind of an everyman Thor in this. He shows off Thor's power. It's really good.
That has rocketed to like being kind of one of Marvel's A-list titles right now in the last several months.
Mm-hmm. And if you love G.I. Joe and Rob Liefeld, Snake Eyes' Dead Game hits number 2 this week.
Yep. Depending on your temperament, you're either going to want to definitely avoid it or definitely get it.
It's true.
Dave, anything else on your list?
That's
everything. All right. That is it for comics for the week, and we'll be back next week with more. And until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.